from High Point Outing Group in Louisville, Kentucky. That's all she wanted me to say, but I think I had to say a little bit more. I haven't known Dixie long. I just met her yesterday. And from what I know, she's given me a lot, and listen to her. She's got a good head on her shoulders, and I think you'll learn a lot from her, too. She's a great person. I love her. It's Dixie.
I'm very nervous. Like she said, my name is Dixie, and before I go on with my talk, I have to tell Steve that I heard your talk last night and I thought it was great, really. I'm 16 years old, and both of my parents are alcoholics. From as far back as I can remember, my mother has always drank, and on her fourth marriage, she married a man who was a social drinker, and they both soon became alcoholics. They've been dry alcoholics for about 4 years, and I've been in Alateen for about 4 years. Before my mother's fourth marriage, I was about 5 or 6 years old. And my oldest brother would cook and clean the house when my mother worked. She would get up at 6:30 in the morning to go to clean houses, and she'd come home, she'd eat dinner, and then she would stay in an hour until about 2 o'clock in the morning. On weekends, my mother went out and my oldest brother watched it. And my mother had a boyfriend and he drank and I hated him. I had such a resentment against him. Like, this man, it never, you know, to me, like this man never kept his hands off of my mother as far as hitting her. And that's one thing that I just couldn't stand. One night he threatened to kill my mother. He goes, well, you know, it sounds kind of strange, but he goes, I'm coming back tonight because I'm going to kill you. So my brother and a friend of his were out in the living room with shotguns in their hands waiting for him to come. My mother and my sister and I were in the bathtub. Our bathtub kind of faced out toward the house. That way we could see when he was coming. And that night I fell asleep in the bathtub, not knowing when my mother was going to be alive or dead when I woke up the next morning. I remember walking home at 1 o'clock in the morning many times. One time we were at a friend's house and mom and her boyfriend got into an argument and we had to walk home. We ducked into a phone booth as he went past so he wouldn't see us. And when we did get home, he had already been there and he tore up the house, kicked in a fan, and scared my brother half to death. The hatred that I had for him, it just kept building up. There was no way that I could like this man ever. And like I'd seen him drunk and I'd seen my mother drunk, but I don't think it was the part to where they were drunk. It was just that he was hitting my mom. One time I was across at a neighbor's house and there was a bunch of us sitting out in the front yard. And all at once I heard a crash and my mother's boyfriend starts running out the door. And my sister opens the door and takes a beer bottle and throws it at him and misses him by about half an inch. So I walked in the house and there was my mother. We had a couch that separated. My mother was in between them. He had hit her and I could tell she was hurt. I hated that man, you know, like he was taking a part out of me by what he was doing to my mother. There was 4 of us kids, my 2 oldest brothers and my sister and myself, and we were taken care of. And my sister and our cousins, who kind of lived in the adjoining house, we'd save our money, and on weekends we'd go and buy cigarettes and go up in the woods and smoke, and I've still got the habit. We lived in a poor neighborhood, and the clothes that I did have were hand-me-downs. One time, I was in the second grade, and the principal knew our family real well because my brothers and my sister had been through the school. And he came down, and like, there's certain schools to where they'll bring in clothes for the needy families. And he brought this coat down to my second grade class and told me to try it on. It was one of the coats that they had brought in. And it fit, and to me, that was just like having a new coat. I can remember it exactly to a T. Like I said, we lived in a rough neighborhood, and we were most of the time getting in fights, you know, but we were 3/4 of the time getting the cops called on us, but that doesn't necessarily mean we always did it. One time, this cop walks up to the door, and my mom, she comes to the door, and he says, "I have a report that your sons have been jumping on the top of a car." And my mother cracks up laughing. So she yells at my brothers, you know, and my brothers walk in, and the cop goes like this. My brothers are 6'4 and 6'2, and they weigh about 200 pounds. He looked at my mother, he goes, "I think I had the wrong house." I didn't think too much, you know, about my mom's drinking at this time. I just figured everybody did. My sister and I went to church every Sunday with my aunt and my grandmother and my cousins. And Mom said that there was times to where she would quit drinking and go to church with us, but I don't remember this. I just can't seem to recall it. We were a close family, I mean, as far as that was concerned, I guess because we didn't have much, and that kind of held us together. I've seen my mother do a lot, and I really feel that affected my morals later on as far as my relationships with other people. I've seen my mother hit and yelled at and cussed at until I thought I'd kill the next man that touched her. I didn't have many friends because I was always beating my friends up. I was pretty good at that. And I didn't have any close ones because I just wasn't the type that could really come right out and be open with somebody. So here comes my mother's fourth marriage. And she marries a man who's 35 years old. He's got the silver hair, and he's got the, you know, the great smile, the laughing eyes, everything to go with it. And I loved him. He was adorable, you know. And, like, at this time I was about 7 years old, and I'd go and I'd sit on his lap, and he'd call me his baby girl, and I ate it up, you know. And, I mean, he drank, but he promised that he would never hit my mother. And that's something that, I mean, you know, if this man can do that, then he's got to be something, you know. And he had to care an awful lot about my mother to marry her with four kids. Oh, let me see. My parents, they would go out and get drunk, but I can't remember really any big arguments. They had a little disagreement one time. My mother was asleep on the couch, and my father got upset. So he drank a case of beer, and he was feeling pretty good, you know. And he was mad because Mom was asleep. And, I mean, he got upset, tore his shirt off, and ran outside. And my brothers went out, and they talked him back into the house. And we put him to bed. He got sick. You know, we had to move him from bed to bed, you know. But I still loved him, you know, because he hadn't hit Mom. And that's something I could really look up to him for. We finally moved into a nice neighborhood. I still didn't have the friends, and I still didn't have the nice clothes, but it didn't bother me. My sister and I were what you would call tomboys. We had all the boys in the neighborhood afraid of. Well, you know, like it was mostly my sister, you know, I'd go and run and hide behind my sister, and I'd act bad behind my sister. My parents still drank, but it's not what you would call excessively. And in the fifth grade, I started noticing boys, which a lot of times I feel is the biggest mistake of my life. Okay. At this time, I was straight. I didn't smoke, I didn't cuss, I didn't do any of this other stuff that the other kids were getting into. I'd go places with my parents, you know, like we'd go to bars or taverns with them, you know, because it was kind of nice. Like, my mother would get out on the floor and she'd dance, and so would my dad. There was four of us out one time out on the floor doing the twist, and everybody else moved off. And it's kind of nice to be able to be proud of your parents, you know, just for being themselves. We got to stay out late when we went places with them, but it got to where they would embarrass me. It's like my sister and I played softball, and they started drinking before and after softball games. And one time we went to a tavern with the kids on the team and some of their parents and my dad's nephew and his girlfriend. And we got to the tavern, and one of my mother's ex-husbands was there. And they were out in the front playing some kind of hockey game or something. And my mother's ex-husband started yelling for her to win, and my dad got upset and he hit him. My dad has a temper. And he even hit his nephew that night, and that's something he never did. So we left. My mother walked out of the tavern with a glass of beer in her hand, but it didn't stay there very long because she threw it across the parking lot. My mother has a temper too. We took everybody home. This little girl was supposed to stay the night with us, and we took her home too. And we got to the top of a busy hill in New Albany, and my dad hit my mother. And I was, you know. So Mom says, stop the car, I'm jumping out. Well, he stopped the car and she jumped out anyway. And he was right behind her. And there he was, on top of my mother, just beating the whole, he was beating the hell out of my mother on top of a hill, you know. My sister and I jumped on top of him and tried to get him off. He headed for my sister. My cousin finally got him talked back into the car and they left. And here we were walking home at 1 o'clock in the morning again. That time, I can't think of any more, you know, like this is the first time that I'd ever seen my dad hit my mother. And all the promises that he made were gone. And I hated him. I couldn't love him, you know. He'd hurt me too much. The embarrassment and the fear and the hatred just kept building up inside of me till I wanted to go someplace and hide. And like they could go places and it was all right until they started drinking. At this one place, I remember they were doing all right and they started drinking and they both got drunk. They got into an argument. And my mother ran out to the car and I started screaming and this lady started holding on to me, trying to shut me up. You know, what will the neighbors think? You know, the big society bit. And my mother couldn't drive, and I was scared to death. She starts up the car, and I thought, you know, what if my mother was killed? You know, what would I have? A dead mother and a drunk father, and that's nothing to look forward to. Mom and Dad would go into taverns. My sister and I would have to sit out in the car. And I mean, we didn't like it because they'd always take the keys. And we couldn't listen to the radio. I mean, it was boring. And one time, my parents were in a tavern in Marengo, and my sister and I were outside because we couldn't go inside with them. And it was my birthday. And this old man comes up and he starts talking to us. So we talk back to him. That's one thing my mother has always taught us, is to respect our elders. And after a while, he left. And my sister and I just stayed on outside. And he comes, starts to walk back over. A few minutes later, my sister goes, let's go to the car. I said, you know, why? And she goes, let's go to the car. And I didn't argue with my sister too much because she was rough. So I went to the car, and we were sitting there. And he starts walking over towards the car. And she goes, well, lock your doors. Well, I locked my door and left my window down. And he came over, and he was talking to us. You know, I didn't think he would hurt us. I genuinely thought that he wouldn't hurt us. So he was talking, and the next thing I knew, his hand was reaching in the window, and it was going up my leg, and I froze. I have never felt so afraid in my life. My sister was yelling at me. I couldn't really hear her. It was just like it was in the back of my mind. She hit me, and I felt it. So I jumped over to her side of the car and we ran. And somebody, my parents must have saw it or somebody told him, and they met us halfway around the block. And Dad stood there and he waited till the elderly man came out and he looked at him. He goes, I'd like to kill you. He goes, nobody touches my girl. We found out that the reason that this man wanted us is because he had a retarded son and he wanted one of us girls for him. I can't help but feel that if my parents hadn't gone into the tavern, this wouldn't happen, you know? I mean, I can see my fault in it too, you know, but I genuinely thought this man didn't hurt us. I felt dirty, I was afraid, and I was lonely. And from that time on, I always had this kind of distance of meeting older people. Like I said, we did move into the nice neighborhood, but the neighbors didn't accept us. Like, my parents drank, and the arguments can get loud. And a friend of mine told me one time that him and the guys in the neighborhood used to sit on our next door neighbor's step and watch the arguments going on in our house and listen to them. And I mean, it really made me feel bad for somebody to bring all these resentments back to me. They downgraded us. That's one thing that in our neighborhood they were good at. But at that time, I couldn't really blame them because, I mean, they didn't think we mattered too much, and I didn't either, and I didn't think we ever would. It got to where my parents would go out. We knew what my parents were going to do when they came home. Like, if my parents come home and get into an argument, the first thing my mother will head for is the silverware drawer. So we, ahead of time, put the silverware and hide it so she would know where it was at when she got home. If we were in bed, we put the pillows over our head because we thought that maybe if we couldn't hear it, it wouldn't hurt so much. But we could still hear the crashing. And we knew that sooner or later it would end up with Dad hitting Mom. So we'd go out and check to see if they were all right, and we'd end up getting in the middle and getting physically hurt. And Mom told me later that it was bad because then she had to worry about taking care of herself and us too. The arguments got worse, and I built a shell around me. It wasn't to where I was withdrawn, but I didn't let people know the real me. And I was asked one Sunday what the shell was made of. And like, there's embarrassment, there was hatred, there was self-pity, but most of all, there was this big absence of God. I never let anyone know how bad my head was really messed up. I had a good front, and I had excuses not to go over to friends' house. If they had a good, strong family, I knew what that could do to me because mine wasn't. My sister and I fought. I always ended up with the black eyes and the bloody noses that always threw the ashtrays and the knives. And one time, we had the guys lined all up and down our neighborhood, you know, our driveway. My sister and I were out there fighting, and they were ready to charge admission. I don't know. I know this might sound strange, but I think it's kind of a way of my sister and I showing our affection for each other. Because we want the type to really come right out and say, you know, I care about you. I mean, and after we had fought and got these kind of resentments out, then we would, you know, we were really close. On my brother's 21st birthday, my mom and my dad and my brother went out to celebrate. Well, my dad got drunk, and my brother got drunk, but my mom didn't. My mom and my brother got into an argument, and he called her every name in the book. He cussed her out, and it took four of us to hold down my mother that night. My mother's 5'2" and weighs about 110 pounds, but she's mighty. It got to where Dad was always drunk, and like the last two Christmases before my dad stopped drinking were not Christmases at all. The first time my mother was laid up on the couch because she was drunk. And my sister knew everything that she was getting for Christmas. And that's not a Christmas, you know. The second one, my dad went on rampage. He picked up the Christmas tree and threw it around, picked up a coffee table and kind of gazed my mother's head with it. And it was the first time I looked at my father, I said, "Get the hell out, I can't stand to look at you, you make me sick." He left and he started going for Tennessee, where my oldest brother and his wife lived. And he comes back and he calls my brother on the telephone and he cries like a baby, and I could have gagged. It made me sick. I mean, it wasn't like I had never really seen a grown man cry, and I didn't think it was, you know, like that's not manly, or I can't see that, you know. It got to where my dad would get sick, and well, he'd say that he was sick. He'd have Mom call into work for him and say that he was sick. And like, he'd drink two beers and he'd be drunk. He'd go to bed, he'd get back up, drink two beers, and he'd be drunk again. My mother, like I said, my mother's an alcoholic, but as far as drinking, as bad as my dad did, she didn't. And my mother kind of went on to nerve pills, and that hurts just as much. you know, like I resented my parents because I felt that they were making me suffer for all the things that they were doing wrong. And I couldn't see to where, like, God, why are you making me suffer for all the things that my parents are doing because I have no control over it, you know? What can I say? There's a lot of times that it surprised me that how many times we got home in the car with my dad drinking and my mom drinking. And a lot of times I wondered how long it would take before alcohol killed my parents or they killed each other. When I was little, I can say the thing that I felt most was fear, and second to it, embarrassment. We got to where mom, you know, finally told Dad, she said, well, she goes, if you go into AA, I'll stop too. She goes, because I can see what it's doing to the kids, and she goes, I can see what it's doing to you and me. She goes, if you don't, I'm going to leave you. And she goes, I'm taking the kids with me. Dad agreed for mom to call AA, and I'm sure I was happy, you know, he's going to give it a go, but I was really happier when I was sure he really meant it. Two strangers came to the house that night. They were from AA, and they told Dad that if he didn't stop drinking, that he was going to lose his family and his job and anything that ever really meant anything to him. They said they knew they were alcoholics too, only sober ones. That night, my dad quit, and I've never seen anybody shake so much in my life. My sister and my mom stayed up to give my dad moral support. I didn't care. I went to bed. From that time on, my dad became a dry alcoholic, and my mother did too. I know this is going to sound strange, but my sister and I hated it after a while. Oh, it was a mess, because they were finding out all the things that we'd been doing behind their backs and getting by with. My sister, she was into the wrong crowd, and she was getting messed up. And I was learning more than what I should at my age. I got involved with a guy. And I was getting love from him that I wasn't getting from my parents. My parents hated me, and I hated them for hating him. We'd sneak behind their backs to see each other. Like if I babysit, he'd come over. If my parents came, we'd hide him someplace. He gave me the kind of love and affection that I wasn't getting from Mom and Dad, and this is what I needed, you know. I needed this showed to me. I need to know that somebody cared about me. Because it's awful bad feeling alone with nobody there. We'd always been disciplined, but it seemed after they quit drinking, they were more strict. We argued constantly, got on each other's nerves. It was a mess, it really was. We couldn't talk to each other, we could not communicate. And like this was after they had stopped drinking. After a while, my dad's regular AA group was going to have this banquet. And I went with a friend of mine, you know, I took a friend of mine with me, my mom went, my sister didn't go. And we walked in, you know, we're going to go get us something to eat, what more could it be? And I was introduced that night to somebody from Alateen's, his name was Mark. I was sitting there, and I was eating a ham sandwich. And from the few people who do know me, I'm not the type of person that is at a loss for words. And this guy walked up and said hi to me, and I choked on my ham sandwich. And then my dad looks at me, and he starts laughing. And he goes, well, talk to him. I said, And my dad just laughed. He goes, that's the first time I've ever seen you at a loss for words. My sister and I went the next time. I told her about it, you know. I went to see what the guys look like. If they look like Mark, there's bound to be something there. My sister, she went for a while, you know, it was just something to do. Get out of the house on Thursday nights, you know. But she quit after a while. She couldn't really get into it. I still went. It was something to do. Like the first time I walked into a meeting, you know, I walked in and said, man, these people are crazy. They don't think like I do. And say I was a bitch, and I got a feeling a lot of us knows exactly what that word means. A long time in the meetings, I bored around, you know. I'd do this to get my attention, you know, and I wouldn't listen to what people were saying or get into any of the discussions. I got into a lot of arguments with the kids in the groups because they were going further than I was, and I didn't like it. A lot of people tried to touch me, and I didn't want to be touched. heard people. I didn't have a conscience. This didn't seem to bother me if people were hurting. I thought, you know, well, if I'm hurting, these people are going to hurt, and if I'm going down, they're going down with me. I had a shell, but like it was kind of like a level shell all the way through. I wasn't withdrawing, but I still didn't let people know what I was like. I was in the people who tried to help me. And it was hard for me to love somebody. I thought that if somebody walked up to me and said, I love you, it was just a reaction or something to say, I love you back. But it doesn't necessarily, I couldn't mean it, you know. Before we had a Memphis roundup, I was withdrawn. I mean, I was completely, especially, I mean, during the meetings, I would not talk. I just sat there. I wanted attention, and I wanted it bad. And I was doing it enough to keep my mouth shut. I always felt that I needed this love and attention showed to me. At the roundup, that's the last memory, you know, because that's when I became human. I always started loving people at that roundup, and I could care about them for themselves, and I really tried to find out what they were like. When I came back from the roundup, I started getting interested in the meetings. And I was willing to give a part of myself that I hadn't been before. And I really wanted people to love me just for being me. I felt closer to people, and my shell broke, and I felt human. At that time, my family life improved, and I mean, we were able to communicate, you know, like we loved each other. I mean, like, we still had the family problems and the memories of alcohol, you know, and the excuses. Like my dad would say, if you don't cut it out, you're going to drop, you know, you're going to make me drink again. So one time I just looked at him and I said, Dad, I said, I can't take that anymore. I said, I know better. I said, if you don't have enough willpower and don't have the strength, then don't try to put the blame on me. I said, it's all yours. My sister left home because, like I said, she was involved with the wrong people. And she's, you know, like, things are right now. She's been back, and she left when she was 16, and she'll be 20 in August. I mean, we didn't know just fine. I felt jealous of her when she first came back because she came back on my birthday. And she was getting the attention on my birthday that I wanted, you know. Before I came into Alateens, I felt that God had deserted me, and I felt that he was making me suffer for all my parents' wrongs. I was lonely, I was sad, I was full of self-pity. I just loved to wallow in self-pity. And I hated everything, even myself. And after I came to Alateens, I felt that God hadn't left me, but he had a purpose for what he was doing. He helped me to improve myself, and he gave me strength to keep trying. And one thing that helped me a lot in growing through the program is my poems that I can write. Like, if I couldn't get my feelings out in any other way, I'd write a poem about it. And I wrote one that, you know, I have this problem as far as religion's concerned, you know, and I think you'll understand. Please have patience with me, Lord. Sometimes at night when I go to pray, I can't really think of what to say. How can I pray to you, Lord, whom I've never met before, when I can't love my neighbor who lives just right next door? I see myself fold my hands and slowly begin to kneel, never really totally sure of how I ever feel. Lord, I know I love you. I feel it in my heart, but I cannot accept the times when we're so far apart. Please have patience with me, Lord, through each passing day until I can truly come to you and have serenity when I pray. Right now I say that I have over 150 or 200 poems, and that was one of mine. Morality means to me. That's a big question, you know, because, like, something that I've built my life around. You know, like, when I really got into it, it's all I had, you know. Like, I can't really say that I got into the Serenity Prayer or the 12 Steps that much, but the people were there and they cared. And that's something that's really nice, to even know that somebody cares enough about you to want to sit and listen to what you have to say. Somebody told me one time that when you pray, only you hear yourself. You know, we had a discussion about this in the meeting. And I can't feel that way, you know? It's just like, when I pray, there are two people that hears me, and it's God and myself. And because the reason God has me hear myself is because he wants me to mean and understand everything that I'm saying to him, or it wouldn't be any good.
personal inventory in the 12 steps. And that's a mess, you know? Like, I've always been afraid of, you know, what am I going to find out about myself? Maybe I won't like it, and then where will I be? I'm working on it, but that's a hard thing to achieve. A lot of people help me in outings, and I love them all, you know? But there was two special ones. And they were Roger and Wilma. They were both sponsors of outing groups over in Kentucky. And Roger has these things. I mean, they're cute quotes. Maybe he finds them in books or he makes them up. And one he has in particular that I really like, it says, "I am me, I am good, God don't make no junk." And I think you understand that, and I don't really feel that I have to explain it. I'm a real person, and I like to think about things, and I like to take them apart and analyze them. Like, as far as being able to tell you really what kind of person I am, I'm going to tell you right here. And I mean, like, I get into poems, I guess you can tell that, but this was written by a girl at my school, and it's hard to believe that she's 16 years old. And I believe that it fits so well with me. I'm a sunrise. I'm not as lovely as the sunrise, but I'm the sunrise to those who love me. I'm not as mysterious as the birth of a child, but I was once a child. I'm not as wise as nature's owl, but I have access to wisdom. I'm not as free as the blue sea, but I am an individual. I'm not loved by everyone, but God loves me. I am a sunrise. A lot of times when the real world gets bad, and I can't take it, I go back into all the things that make me happy, you know? Like, everybody's bound to have happy memories back in their lifetime. But the happy memories that I've got are the roundups and the conventions that I've been to and have been able to share with these people. A lot of times I wonder, you know, like, if I'm the unfortunate one. I mean, there are kids whose parents aren't alcoholics, but they don't get to learn and to meet the people that I have. They don't get to understand what's going on. And a lot of, I mean, as far as the disease of alcoholism is concerned, the family now, East. My family. I mean, sometimes, you know, like, it's got its up and downs, just like every family. Like, we had it out about 2 weeks ago. And, like, when I get upset at my parents, I have to get my frustrations out, you know? And, I mean, I think this will help you to understand when your child is upset with you, to where they can't really get through and say, "Mom, listen to me, you know? Dad, I need help." You can judge my thoughts before I even speak. You have worn me down until I am too weak. My feelings are all compacted when you say it's just a phase, into a little paper bag tied in so many ways. My being is like a mirror and the image reflected is you. Now you make all my decisions because my judgment would not do. I respect you for being yourself, but who is to respect me when all they see is a broken image of what you wouldn't let me be? Before I came up here, Father Charles told me, because of an incident that happened as far as the AAs are concerned and the Al-Anons, a subject of a thing that happened about 5 o'clock this morning. And he told me, he said, "Ask God, and if he doesn't want you to say it, then he won't say it." Well, I'm saying it, and I'm not going to be emotional about it, because I think that it's a thing that we would have to talk about. Well, last night, there's the Alateens sitting in the front row, as you can tell. And when Alateens come to conventions, we do not go to bed. last night, at 1:15, well, after the AM meeting last night, we went to our rooms and had an Alateen meeting. But we thought that maybe we would get too rowdy and have the people disturb the other people in our room. So we went outside, and a security cop was walking around, and he stopped and talked to us for a long time. So then we went into the rec room, and we stayed in the rec room until 4:45 this morning, and went up to take our showers. And we had people yelling at us from all directions because we were making too much noise. And if this is an honest program, then I'm going to be honest with you, and I'm sorry, I can't feel the same way. We respected your all's opinions as far as that's concerned, and we stayed out, you know, of the building so you all could sleep. And the least that we could have had is the time to come in and take our showers and get ready before breakfast. Now, the poem that I'm going to finish up with is by Alice Chase. And it's beautiful, it really is. Like, a lot of times I can see that maybe when know, we sit here and say, well, you know, we've got this special love. Well, let's prove it. A lot of times I've seen people who can be phony, and the love that they have is just handed out because they don't know how to really hand out love, you know? And, I mean, this poem expresses it all. I mean, if we're going to be together and be something and help each other, then we've got to be close. And I think it says it all. Yes, I am my brother's keeper. Too many of us go through life with blindfolds on our eyes. So busy with our own pursuits, we fail to realize that all around us there are needs each one of us can fill by giving of ourselves with love, compassion, and goodwill. Sometimes it only takes a smile, a word or two of cheer, a little time to listen with a sympathetic ear. A hand outstretched in friendship is a gift beyond compare to someone who is troubled and burdened by despair. God never meant for us to close our minds and hearts up tight and only see the things that make our world secure and right. He'd rather have us reaching out to touch our fellow man and show that we are willing to help him if we can. So let's tear away the blindfolds and be close to one another. Then we can truly say, I am the keeper, my brother. Thank you.